is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
That's something that I try to keep authentic with the guys, and it's relationship build. From there out, then we can give you information and we can get and outsource all types of information to you. But I just want you to know that I love and care for you, and then you can trust me because I'm going to give you 400.
Tristan Smith is the founder of FitLab USA in Mansfield, Texas. FitLab USA provides athletic development training for athletes in multiple sports and at all levels. Tristan is a former college and pro basketball player who grew up in Amityville, New York. Tristan played his high school basketball for Jack Agostino at Amityville High School, where he was a two-time New York Public School state champion, a McDonald's Top 100 High School All-American, and the Suffolk County Player of the Year in 2001. Smith played his first two seasons of college basketball at St. John's before transferring to St. Francis College, where he finished his career. Tristan later played professional basketball in Uruguay, the ABA, and the USBL. Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Sign up now for their virtual camp 2.0 featuring 10 days of workouts with pro trainers from the Dr. Dish family. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Lionel Garrett from Wilberforce University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram. And be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Are you tired of overpaying for your video and analytics platform? Well, it's time to check out QuickCut.com, a platform built by coaches for coaches. QuickCut is undeniably more affordable. It's all cloud-based and comes packed with features to help high schools and youth programs store, share, and analyze game film. Make the switch, get double the storage, and save your program up to 50% on the fastest-growing video editing system in the country. For more information or to request a free trial, visit quickcut.com/basketball. That's QWIKCUT.com. Take some notes while you listen to this episode with Tristan Smith, founder of FitLab USA in Mansfield, Texas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome to the Hoopheads pod, Tristan Smith. Tristan, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Fellas, thank you so much. Happy New Year, and thank you for sharing your platform with me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. We are excited to have you on. You have had quite a journey in the game of basketball, and you are now coaching and impacting athletes of all ages, from young kids all the way through those of us who are adults that are still trying to be athletes. So let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about growing up and what your first experiences were like with the game of basketball.
Yeah. So my father was big time athlete in our area. So early on, it was actually the game of baseball that really I gravitated towards. He was on the circuit heavily in Long Island with softball. So I was one of those guys that was pretty much his wingman. So I was there, you know, with the bat and ball and everything, watching the Mets, you know, do all of those things. So I knew all of the players, the 86 team. So it was baseball early on.
Who was your guy?
Probably Darryl Strawberry.
Yep.
Or on the field.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You didn't want to emulate his off-field antics, but yeah, on the field for sure.
Yeah, he was big time. So always was a sports guy, but in the neighborhood, you played pretty much everything. So we played sports all year round. So basketball was something that we did, when it started getting around that time. You're watching NBA and you go out and emulate New York Knicks or the team. So you out there, you're shoveling snow and you're playing at an early age. But it was just recreational. The first league it's kind of like a street league, actually, for a summer. It was called Make It, Stay in School at our legendary park, Bolden Mat. So that's the one that I have the earliest memory. So I'm probably around third or fourth grade, probably about fourth grade. And that was when, you know, it's a combination of the real basketball guys and the real guys that were tough. You know what I mean? We got guys that are in there, you know, trying to steal bikes, and they out there playing against. So it developed a level of toughness in the neighborhood early on. So from those elementary days, basketball was a part, and just overall being an athlete was a part for sure.
How do you look at the game today and the way kids come up through sort of the summer circuit and AAU versus the way that you learned the game, which I'm guessing primarily you were outside playing a lot of basketball outdoors, which kids today just don't do anymore. How much of that basketball playground culture do you credit with A, developing your love for the game, and then B, making you a better player because you had to play against guys that were a lot older than you, a lot bigger than you, a lot stronger than you? I really think that that's something that has gone away. And we've talked about that before on the podcast, but I just think there's such a difference in the way kids come up through the system today versus the way that we used to do in the old days.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I think there's pros and cons to both concepts.
For sure.
Both environments. There's a level of edge and toughness that comes with playing with guys that just came from the side. They got Tim's on and jeans and you're playing against them. But you get that credibility. You know, they might bloody your mouth and lip and everything like that, but it develops a level of toughness that you can carry with you both on and off the court. And it gives you some life lessons early on, where now there's a lot more resources than ever before. You know, you have YouTube videos, you have online trainers, you can do stuff through Zoom, and you have a lot of people that are considering themselves trainers everywhere. So you can get hands-on help more so than ever before. But one thing is those cones don't move. So they don't move. So it's a fine balance that you want to keep. And I would recommend that the support system recognize those things, that if it doesn't really translate over to the court, you know, you really don't need that much of it. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stuff going on for the social media world. So you get in that element to where guys are, they're almost immune, or they're very, very uncomfortable with healthy criticism because of it. And you're getting a more complete athlete at an early age, but also a more sensitive athlete as well. So I think it's a unique balance that you're trying to keep, because I'm on the other side now as right. far as training these guys, you know, especially a lot through strength training. So you have to kind of work your way in massaging in certain information. You might lose that kid. Where we grew up, you know, it was tough love.
It absolutely was. It was a lot different than it is today. When you're dealing with today's athlete, what are some ways that you go about putting that constructive criticism in front of them so that they know what they need to improve on, and you tell them what they need to hear, not what they want to hear? And as you sort of indicated, not everybody does that. A lot of times we look at kids today and everybody just is telling them how great they are and, hey, you're this and you're that, right, or you should be this. And then when they finally do run into somebody who tells them the truth of, hey, you got some holes in your game, or, hey, here's what you got to work on, or, hey, you're not as good as you think, or you're not a Division I player, maybe you're a Division III player. A lot of times players, and especially parents today, who, as you know, are far more involved in their kids' athletic lives than they were back 15 or 20 years ago. So how do you go about, as somebody who works with young athletes, how do you go about making sure that they hear what they need to hear so that they can improve and get better? What's your philosophy or thoughts on that?
There's really no textbook on it. I think every individual has to be themselves. So for me, I like to just try to tell the truth in love. So the first and most important thing is I first look at it in a build, breakdown, build type of a situation. So I'll give them something that they do well, then I'll give them something that they can improve upon, and then I'll finish up with giving them something that they do well. So I kind of sandwich in the thing that they need the most inside of two things that they do well, so they can try to receive it. And at the same time, I try to involve them in the decision making a little bit more than we were involved in the decision making. So I'll ask them, you know, what did you see? What do you feel? So a lot of times I'll film it, so that way they'll give me their feedback. So if they're not honest with themselves, we just show it to them. So in a sense, I'm putting them in front of the mirror. You know what I mean? It's not coming from me. And I always make sure early on that inside of my facility, or if you're around me, it's going to be, I'm going to treat you like family. And you may not like it. So, you know, you have the option of going elsewhere and being a part of somebody else's family. But I'm going to give you the real, because I care about you. I'm not going to just tell you what you're trying to hear. And that's what a lot of people are surrounding themselves with. And like you said, it's going to come to them somewhere in their fitness journey, in their athletic career, to where you can't hide. My job is to try to help you to not be exposed. The job of the opponent is to expose you. So why don't we look at these things and highlight the areas of opportunity so that we can expose them before the opponent exposes you? So I try to take that approach. Give them something that they're good at. Give them something that they're not good at. That's my focus, sandwiched in between two things that they're good at.
When you first meet somebody who comes into your facility and they're talking about wanting to work with you to improve as an athlete, what's your process for bringing somebody on board, getting to know them, getting to know what kind of athlete they are, and what some of the things are that they need that you want to improve on? How do you put together a plan when an athlete walks through your door? And I know you're working with a large variety of age groups. So let's say it's a high school athlete. What's that process look like?
One of the first things is what are you trying to get out of this? Because I'm done. I'm a recreation guy now, right? So I can't want it more than you. You know what I mean? I got Absolutely. Other people. I got my own family and everything to worry about. You know what I'm saying? I need to know how much I'm invested into you. And I'm always going to give you 100%. But I just need to know how much time I need to put into you. You know what I mean? If you're looking to do X, Y, or Z, then I'm there to help you do X, Y, or Z. That's a verbal commitment that you give it. And sometimes we'll put it on paper. So we'll start with that. And then from there, I'll ask the parent to see if it lines up. Then we'll start with like some basic assessments to kind of see what the overall athleticism looks like. And then we'll take it from there. And one thing that I tell them, part of my verbal contract is, if we're going to do this, all I need from you is communication and effort. Like, that should go with you like the skin on your body. You can't leave your skin at home. So your communication and your effort should never leave. I mean, it should never leave your side, just like the skin on your body. So if we can do those things, then we can build.
What do you think when you look back on your sporting life and you think about the different coaches that you played for, what's one or two things that you can maybe point to, a specific coach that you played for that you use in your coaching and your training today? Something that you learned from a coach that you think is applicable to the athletes that you work with today? Is there anything that sticks out?
For sure. It's got to be my high school coach, Coach Jack Agostino. And the first thing is relationship building. That's something that really is hard to fake. You can have X's and O's. You can have somebody that's built like an encyclopedia and give you all of those things, but it can be very cold. And you can absorb that information, but the relationships last so long because it brings the trust factor up so high. So that's something that I take with me all the way through, because we are human. So you want to keep the human element in there. And as you get up in age, basketball is a business. And you know what I mean? It starts to get robbed earlier and earlier in today's age because everything is so public. So that's something that I try to keep authentic with the guys, and it's relationship build. From there out, then we can give you information and we can get and outsource all types of information to you. But I just want you to know that I love and care for you. And then you can trust me because I'm going to give you 400.
What does that look like? So on the ground, you talk about building relationships. You're talking about letting an athlete know that, hey, you can trust me, that I have your best interest at heart. What does that actually look like in terms of the actions that you're taking, the words that you're using, how you're going about building those relationships? What does that look like in your mind?
I think the first thing is just feeling out the kid. You know, a lot of these kids, they're not great. They're not great. Not all of them are great at face-to-face talking. They're better at, you know, texting and everything like that. So sometimes the best thing is just to fall back. don't overload them with too much. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Give them a little bit. And then, you know what I'm saying? Almost just kind of let them dictate how this relationship is going to go. We might not say that many words to one another. So then I'll use the parent as the bridge. So I think you got to have the wisdom to be able to kind of meet the kid where they're at. And you have some that are very talkative and I can go ahead and give them a little bit more words. I can give them more sentences. So you have to be able to feel out the people and their personality. And from there, the credibility starts to go up, especially one of the major things I do is I'm able to break their body down with the imbalances on a few assessments. I can kind of break down, hey, you sit down a lot. You're right-handed. You're left-footed. You do this. You do that. You have trouble doing these things. And now their eyes start to, you don't even know me. How do you know that about me? It's just because, you know, saying certain things that you have going on through this assessment. So you start to see early on there's a level of trust that goes with it. And then I'll just ask them questions, man. Hey, who's your favorite player? You know what I'm saying? What style of play do you like? You know, things of that nature. And from there, just try to break the ice. But really just talk to them like they would want to be talked to or I would want to be talked to.
Do you think that's something that you've gotten better at since you started?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I used to have trouble with is when you get exercises and everything, you want to throw them out there. And
you're like, hey, I learned something. I need to share this.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to hang from the ceiling today. I just learned this thing, man. Let's go ahead and get sit Indian style. But I want you to jump up and do the backflip because I've seen it and I tried it and it's really hard. So it's falling back and keeping it very simple. So I had to learn that because one of the biggest things I've learned, Mike, is that everybody's not at the same level of you when you are an athlete or other athletes that you're in contact with. So you have to be able to use wisdom for each person. And then if you're working with the group, you have to have something that everybody's going to be able to do to keep them safe and then keep them engaged. So it definitely was a learning lesson.
That's so true. I think one of the hardest things that I found when I was coaching is to realize that, and I've realized the same thing as a parent, that kids that you're working with or kids that are your own kids, they're not necessarily wired in the same way that you are. So whereas I might have wanted, hey, give me more, give me more, give me more, not every kid that you work with is going to be of that same mindset. Not every kid is going to come in with the same level of commitment or desire or attitude, or maybe they have strengths and weaknesses that are different from the strengths and weaknesses that you had. And I think one of the things that you have to do as a coach is, and this is what I hear you saying, is you kind of have to step outside yourself and figure out what the kid needs and not make it about you and what you just learned. It's more like, hey, what do I know that I can pass along that's going to benefit this particular athlete? I'm sure for you, I'm just curious because I know you work with athletes of all different sports. You're working with volleyball players and maybe a sport that you don't have as much experience with actually playing. So how do you go about relating to those athletes that you didn't play their sport maybe at as high a level as you did with hoops?
Great question. So I think one thing that does help me is that I know sports. You know, I know movement patterns. I played multiple sports growing up and was fortunate enough to have success at multiple sports. So I understand enough about that from firsthand experience. And then also I respect all of the sports. Like I went and got certified to train golfers. So now I train a PGA golfer, Tom Hoge. So he's on the tour. So I've learned how to step outside of my comfort zone to see how their body works and what they need, and then how they all correlate. There's certain movement patterns, there's certain exercises that correlate to all sports. And then you have other ones that are going to be a bit different based on the body type, based on the level, and all of these different types of things. So what I do is I have a foundation that works with all sports, and then I build out. Now, as far as learning, like when I got to Texas, I knew nothing about volleyball because it's not very big in New York where I'm from. But I was fascinated to like, why is it not as big? These athletes are phenomenal. First of all, they listen. I'm like, what? That's step one. They listen.
There you go.
Know what I mean? I'm like, yeah. I don't got to tell you five times. They tell you once or twice. And So you have that, and then, you know, now I'm asking all of these questions. So I ask questions. If I don't know, I ask questions to answer your question. I ask questions, I do research, and I try to make sure that I surround myself with people that are smarter than me and other things, and I try to keep my ego low. And that's helped me out a lot.
How'd you end up in Texas?
Really, it was kind of just a taking a leap of faith and just looking at the cost of living, but also just kind of having a vision, you know, in the near future to be able to start something like I'm starting up now. And it's a lot more difficult to do that in New York just because of cost of living and there's not as much space. And just knowing that this area is a hotbed for athletes, I'm like, there's a way for me to go ahead and create a lane.
All right, give people the elevator pitch on that lane, on what you're doing with FitLabs USA. Give us an idea of how you got it started, where the idea came from, and sort of what your vision is for where you are now and where you're hoping to go with it.
Yeah, so when I first got out here, I was fortunate enough to land a job at Lifetime Fitness, which is one of the biggest, you know, gyms in the country, literally in size. They got everything in there. It's designed to have your family stay the whole day. And they got, right? They got
yep,
something
that's for sure
for everybody. So that blew my mind. I never seen anything like that. So I learned the business of the fitness, and inside of that, it helped me out to know to understand the back, the business side of the fitness. I was like, I already was an athlete, so I got that side. I could relate to them. Now I need to know more about training them. And from there, it was an opportunity to go ahead and get my LLC. So I got that in 2016 and started from scratch with a small storefront. And really, I wanted to lock into sports performance. So a lot of the young athletes, you know, they had to travel maybe an hour or so out to get some of the things that we're providing now. So my goal was to first reduce the risk of injury. You know what I mean? So teach these young athletes how to optimize their body. You know, it's pretty much a machine. So everything works off of each other. So just learning how to optimize their body to reduce the risk of injury, improve performance, and improve recovery. Because if you take care of your body, then it's going to improve your confidence. You don't have to worry about, oh, this is, you know what I mean, feeling lax or not as strong. Now you're just concentrating on building your skill set for your respective sport. So that was my mind frame in doing so. And then from there, it kind of just morphed into me working with a lot of different athletes. Cause when I first start, I'm thinking football. I'm in Texas. Thinking football, crazy. But it's really hard to get involved with a lot of the football because all of the schools, they have their own sports and performance guys there, and they like to lock in with those guys. So now I'm having to think outside the box. So now I got volleyball. Whatever coming through my door, I'm training. You play ping pong, I'm going to teach you how to be a better ping pong player.
All right. So how do you build that business in a geographic area where you're not from, where you don't have all those connections that you might have had back in New York to at least get a couple clients in the door? What does that look like when you're just starting out? How are you going about getting the word out about what you're trying to do?
I invited every athlete that I knew. I invited every athlete that I knew, and I was giving discount sessions and free demos. And I would you know, have them sign a waiver, and I'll ask them, could they put it out, or am I able to put them out on my story or on my thing? And I use social media. Social media is a big deal for fitness, for fashion, for food. So it travels fast. It travels fast. And I already had a little bit of buzz from Lifetime. I was there for a couple of years. So I was able to settle in enough to where I had credibility in what I was doing, working with all the demographics there. So it really just started with that. You know what I mean? Just like pop the trunk type. Sell a CD mentality. Hey, you come in, man. What you doing? You know what I'm saying? You going to the Subway? Come in, man. Come get this workout.
Come on, check it out.
We'll get this workout, man. Break them down in like 20 minutes and they're like tongue hanging out in an appropriate way. Like, man, I never did anything like that. Cause for me, my concept is keep it very simple and stack a lot of simple together. So that was my concept. We're going to take a lot of simple exercises and we're going to combine them to where it keeps you safe, but now you don't understand why your leg is shaking, even though you didn't lift a whole lot of weight. It was the three combinations of exercises. So that was kind of how I did it. And from there, we just kind of just kept building off that.
What's been the most challenging part of growing the business? So once you get it off the ground, what has been the part that, I don't want to say the hardest part, but just when you look at it, when you think about what you've been able to build to this point, what's been the most challenging aspect of that?
The easiest answer in the world, the pandemic.
Yeah, there you go.
Pandemic, because right before the pandemic hit, September of 2019, I got into a bigger space.
And perfect timing, right?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. So we almost tripled the size, and now we're in a suite inside of a really big sports facility where they have 8 basketball courts and like 16 volleyball courts, and they run a lot of AAU things. So I'm like, this is going to be major for me. So the transition was really quick. I took over the spot from a baseball facility that ended up moving to another big facility. So it was a quick turnaround. So I'm doing a lot of this on the fly, and I'm pretty much a one-man band. I have my dad who's out here. He helps me out, but kind of a one-man band. So I'm learning a lot of stuff on the fly, and we finally get some traction for the springtime. COVID hit. I got a couple of big contracts lined up to start working and partnering with some teams. And I was like, that's the lane I'm really trying to get into. So I had a soccer team and COVID hit, and I'm like, oh man. So now the restrictions is crazy. And then also people are fearful about meeting up with each other. So I'm like, this is perfect timing. And you know, the bills don't stop. they give you a little relief at, you know, push the date back where you're like, listen,
but that
man,
big rent check is still due,
the,
right?
The big rent check is, I can't give them the monopoly money. That's illegal. So I'm like, this is tough. So that's by far the toughest, because it was so sudden. And then it was something that we haven't seen before, to where you have people that would like to work out, but they might not be comfortable working out inside of a facility. So it changed the whole dynamic of what we're doing, and we had to slowly build up. And then also some of the people that we were ready to partner with, they lost their money. So now they're keeping stuff in-house they running boot camps. You're like, bro, you're not even certified. What you y'all supposed to be letting me do that? They're like, nah, we need all of these dollars ourselves. We going to do it. So it changed the dynamic for sure. So we've been slowly, you know, kind of getting back into that. But it really, to be honest, it almost took us out all the way. So it's been a blessing. You know, I'm thankful to the Lord that we were able to keep going, because a lot of my small business colleagues, especially if I was in New York, I would have been super out of there. So just, you know what I mean? Depends on where you were at and what you had situated. A lot of people weren't able to keep going forward.
What's the biggest thing you've learned about running your own business?
Oh, man. What's the biggest thing? The biggest thing is to stay professional, because all it takes is one negative thing. And sometimes it doesn't even have to be all the way true. That will shut you down. All it takes is one negative. So if you want to stay professional, make sure that you document everything. Make sure you document everything, stay professional, and make sure you treat everybody with respect, because especially now, it's one post right there get you going.
Yeah, social media do it,
it
to you,
get
right?
Get you going, Mike. Like, it don't even have to all the way be true. Like, you wake up and you're viral.
Yep. Could you imagine? I say this all the time, but I could not imagine being a Division I basketball player or a professional basketball player with social media the way it is today. And the amount of scrutiny and just the amount of stuff that comes at these kids who are playing college basketball or college sports or high school sports for that matter, I just couldn't imagine what it must be like for those athletes to have that social media in their face all the time.
God bless them. Like, I have empathy because first of all, they are human beings. And there's only so much thick skin that you're going to be able to have. And there's only going to be so much of the keeping your mouth closed. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Why dudes is creating burner accounts.
Right, exactly. They're like, I got to get back. I got to get back at somebody.
I got to clap back at somebody. I know this guy hasn't even played. He's probably somebody's basement right now. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And because everybody has a voice. And not everybody should have a voice, in my opinion. Some people need to just keep their mouth quiet, especially if you don't have any experience in certain things. So the people that we see on the television, regardless of age, they're the easiest target. They're the easiest target. You know what I mean? So you can be whatever you want through the Twitter fingers. So it would be very difficult. So there's certain things that are difficult and that work against them like that. And then there's certain things that work for you. Like, you can have something be seen across the world and you can create a whole new career or occupation that wasn't there before. So there's a pro and a con to it as well. But absolutely, it'll be really tough. I know me in high school, you give me a blue check, man, I'm acting a fool. I'm not proud to admit that, but I'm going to keep it a stack. Like, I'll be out there, like, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I know the DM is probably going to be looking crazy. Like, I'm like, oh, man.
There would have been let's put it this way, there would have been a lot of highlights, right? I know you've been posting, there would have been a lot of things that would have gone up there that probably you look back on it now, you'd be like, ooh, I don't know if I should have put that out
there.
Yeah,
some people pulling that up from 2001. You're like, right. Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Or you think about the rivalries that you had, whether it was with teams or whether it was with an individual player, and the things that you might have said to each other on the floor that – you know,
that
obviously disappeared.
Right,
that disappeared. That nobody, you still have those things in your memory, but nobody's got any proof that those things were ever said. But
never
man,
said it. Yeah.
It's crazy now. You think about just
you have
you know,
to
every,
be much more diligent. You have
yeah,
to be much more diligent and much more aware from an early age. I mean, I'm seeing kids in sixth grade with a blue check
for sure.
I'm like, man, they barely know how to walk the hall of their school. And they got a blue check and everybody, you got adults, you know, falling over them. I'm like, man, this is out of line. It's out of bounds.
And everybody's carrying a camera. I mean, everybody's carrying a camera.
Everybody's carrying a camera.
And, you know, you think about just, again, you never know where you are or what you're doing. And it's just, I couldn't imagine growing up. And not that I was doing bad stuff, but man, just
one wrong move and you out of there. So that's something that I watch, because you see other people and I let that be an example. Like, I got to make sure that I got to stay locked in all the time, because it's not just me, but it's my family. You know what I'm saying? My wife and my kids are connected to me. My mom, everybody. So if I have any outbursts, you know what I'm saying? It's coming back to everybody. You know what I mean? So I take that into consideration with everything. Because there's sometimes you want to let off on a couple people. Like, hey, let me fix this guy real quick. You know what I mean? I got a thing or three to tell this dude. But you got to learn how to be diplomatic. So I've learned that over my time. Most important thing to do as a business owner and continue to humble yourself enough to build your network. Build your network because, you know, that network goes a long way. Who knows you and what they know about you goes a long way.
Well, it goes back to what you talked about right off the top, right? Relationships and
absolutely
what you learned from Coach Agostino. So let's go back to that time when you're a high school player.
Okay.
Share some of your memories from that time at Amityville. What made it special? What made Coach Agostino so special? Just your teammates. Just talk a little bit about what your high school experience was like.
For sure. So for me, I was one of the first freshmen to start at our school. We have a pretty good tradition, pretty rich tradition in basketball. And prior to Coach Agostino being there, we had a legendary coach, Fred Williams, and then there was a guy named Jack Smith that was there before him. So he kind of took it with no experience because Coach Fred Williams had gotten cancer and nobody wanted to take the job. So he was like, I'll do it. And green. I didn't know what the heck he was doing. And my you know, the basketball team is predominantly black. So, you know, Amityville is about 10,000 people. And it's kind of this split. So South Amityville is predominantly white and the North Amityville is predominantly black and minority. So when he took over the team, it's, you know, it's predominantly black team. He's a young white male. And I mean, it was right off the edge of the crack epidemic and everything. Like, so he's dealing with some stuff and he built the relationships with the community. So by the time I got in the late 90s in the high school, he was already established enough to where he had the respect because I met him first in sixth grade. So it's kind of a farm system. He came in, checked it out and he's like, okay, we're going to be pretty good. We got a couple of good guys coming through the ranks. So eighth grade, I'm on JV. Ninth grade, I thought I was going to be on JV as well. So I went and tried that. It kicked me out the gym. It was like, dude, you on varsity? So I'm like, oh man, that's how green I was. You know, we didn't have the resources. Like you said, we just go out there and play. So I didn't know. So I come off the bench in like the fifth game and I had a monster write up because we came back and won and they gave me a write up in the paper. And then I've been a starter ever since. So from there, Coach Agostino always had a lot of faith in me. Even when I played bad, like I couldn't shoot in ninth grade. I was left hand banded. I can give you some stats, give you some steals and stuff. You pack the zone in, it's not going to be good. I'm out there shooting air balls and it's not good. But there was through that fire, there was always like, I got to get better. There was always an inner drive for me to get better. And we had a lot of guys like that had a lot of talent. There was a lot of talent, but there was also a lot of drive and there also a lot of sacrifice because we all wanted to win. We never won the state title yet. We won a lot of Long Island championships and New York State Final Fours, but never the Long Island title. So I can remember coming in with guys like Jason Frazier. I had teammates, Eugene Nottingham, who was a monster football player, but a dual sport athlete. And Billy Kretz, who was kind of the same way. And we had this collection of guys that sacrificed a little bit of their game in order for us to win. And Agostino helped us because he was always honest with us. If we didn't have a good game, he knocked on front. He going to say, bro, that wasn't good. We'll be like, yo, coach, I had a good game. Nah, it wasn't good. And now everybody's joking on each other, you know what I'm saying? But we had that type of relationship to where we could help hold each other accountable. So we end up going my 10th grade year, we lost to the state title, the state championship team, and I feel like I fumbled the bag. I messed up. I missed the front end of a 1-1. We was at their home. We was up by like 9 points, Mike, but like a minute and a half, and we fumbled it. We fumbled it. We started messing up and just not doing the right thing of taking care of the ball, a couple questionable calls, but really on us. And we end up losing in overtime. So that propelled us to say, we don't want to feel that again, because they end up winning it all. So going into my junior year, we had most of that team coming back. And we ended up, I think we ended up going like 24-3, and we ended up winning our school's first title. I was the first state tournament MVP in my school's history. So it was a whirlwind, man. Like, we didn't know what the heck we was doing, but we knew that we was capable of doing that, if that makes sense.
It does. What did it look like when you started knowing that you had to get better and you wanted to work on your game? How did you go about doing that and getting better and improving so that you could get to the places that you wanted to get to?
It was an interesting dynamic because, again, my dad, he barely knew anything. I didn't know until like I got older that he was like, dude, I didn't even have a free throw routine. He said, I watched Clyde Frazier. He said, I watched a bunch of different guys and I would change it all the time. Nobody showed me a set. So I'm like, dang, they didn't even show you a set free throw routine. So we had a bunch of guys that are like this and we didn't have any of that. So I would watch the game, NBA or NBC, and I would just go in or TNT, and I would just take elements over there and I would go outside and I would just practice things. I would just practice things the best way I knew how. So for me, I was working at such a disadvantage of what you would see today that guys will probably pick up in like sixth grade because they have these resources. I was out there with pure athleticism. I had good court awareness and, you know what I mean, good hand-eye coordination and everything like that. But I played way too fast. Like, man, slow down, Tris. You know what I mean? But yep. I didn't have anybody tell me, you know what I mean? Change speech when you change directions. You know what I mean? Use and shield your body. Use your body as a shield. You know, everything was face up. And so when I look back at, you know what I'm saying, myself as a young player, I'm like, man, I'm leaving a lot on the table. But there was still production because there was a good drive and a good enough athleticism. And Ag did a great job of allowing us to be ourselves, but also getting us to play hard. And we're diving on the floor and skinning up our shirts and stuff like during practice. So like, why are we doing this? Diving and saving the loose ball. You're like, coach, I've probably done this one time all season. But he was instilling effort. Like we talked about, communication and effort. You know, we do the shell drill and ball, ball, ball. I'm like, coach, this is 30 minutes of shell. It's 30 minutes of shell, man. We are up and down, team. Can we get some shots up? But it's that instilling the effort and the communication that we was talking about earlier. So it was really just doing what you could, you know, inventing drills and stuff like that. Yep. And you stand over there, man.
For
and,
sure.
And you come crash into me when I go put this layup there, you know what I'm saying? Get one of the goons of the day. They for sure don't mind crashing into you. So you're working on that. So it's really just using your creativity. And then as you started getting up in high school, I would say probably around like 2001 and 2002, as I was crossing over into college, you started seeing the resources of trainers.
Yeah, the training business, really, when you think about it, where it's now it's exploded to the point. I laughed when you said earlier that you had people that are doing things without any kind of certification, which you can walk down any street in America today and find 10 people who are doing lots of things related to whether it's the athletic training like what you're doing or whether it's basketball training, that have, unfortunately, very little certification. I think that's one of the things that if I could wave a magic wand and help to improve youth basketball, if we could figure out a way to certify youth coaches and trainers and get the best training for our coaches, it would really help players. Yeah, it would really help our players in a lot of different ways. And I think I was laughing again when you're talking about just kind of inventing drills and having this and that, and you're just kind of outside
for
trying
real.
To figure it out. That's exactly. I mean, there was no blueprint. You just had to kind of figure it out. I remember when I'm working out, I'm like, all right, what is it that I try to do in games? And I've joked about this on the podcast before, but probably from the time I was a freshman or sophomore in high school until the time I got done with my college career, I basically had two workouts. I had a workout I did when I was by myself, and then I had another workout that I did if I was lucky enough to have somebody that wanted to shoot with me so they'd rebound
for
me.
Can you rebound for me?
Yeah, right.
Hey, come here, little man. Come rebound for me.
Exactly. Well, I had a guy that No, his name was Scott Roth, and he grew up in the area around me. And Scott ended up, he went to the University of Wisconsin, and he played in the NBA, played overseas. And he's probably about 6 or 7 years older than me. And one day I was up at the playground when I was probably, I don't know, I was maybe 14, 15, somewhere in there. And he pulls up in his car, and I had watched him growing up because he went to a high school that was close to me. So I knew who he was. He had obviously no idea who I was, but he pulls up and he's like, "Hey, I'm looking for somebody that has a lot of energy that wants to play me full court one-on-one. Are you interested?" I'm like, "All right." So here I am, this skinny little 14 or 15 year old kid, and I'm going up and down full court on this playground in the middle of July. It's, you know, 90 degrees. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Smoking hot outside.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's different than the way kids grow up today. And to your point, I think you said it well, that there's pluses and minuses to both systems. And for sure, kids have way more exposure to coaching. When I first went to college, Tristan, my very first day of college practice, they said, "All right, we're going to work on closeouts." And I literally was like, "I don't know what that is."
Oh, what's that?
I'd never heard that term once as a high school player. And you think about now, kids who are 7 have probably already heard that 1,000 times. So absolutely, there's such an advantage there that kids are exposed to better coaching and more resources. And I think it just gives them an opportunity. But yeah, it's funny how we just went about getting better. It was like you just went out, you tried to figure it out, and
there's
maybe
an inner drive. There's a lot more inner drive inside of that era than it is now.
Yes.
It is now. Yes. Like, you can have a parent that wants it for the kid from
for
5
sure.
and they'll
for
have
sure.
the resources set up, especially if they have the funds.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And it's a lot more posh. It's inside the cool air conditioning. We can do it all year round. If you get heat, if it gets too cold outside, and you do these things, but there's some element of toughness that is missing because you're not getting those elbow scrapes. You're not getting knocked down by some of these guys. You're not getting chased. You're not doing the chase. There's some of the elements that come and create life lessons and life skills for you that you're going to be very sensitive to when things don't go your way.
There's always an adult around right now.
There's always an adult around. You know what I mean? There's always an adult around. And then a lot of these adults, when they start getting a name, these kids, they start turning to kids. That's like, you're going to co-sign this action. That makes it worse. You know what I mean? That's the worst combination, is when you have a parent that's acting the same way as the kid and they're know-it-alls as well. And we have a lot of those things because they're trying to protect the kid, but you're going to end up hurting the kid. Because once you cross over to college, it's business. And it's starting to get more business in high school now. But it's going to really hit home when you get to that college age. And that coach is looking to replace your kid as soon as he gets there, immediately.
Right. They're already looking to recruit over you if they can, right?
I'm looking for the next best thing. You know what I mean? He may be better than you. He may not be better than you, but I'm looking. Where at high school, for the most part, I'm staying with you because you're my guy. And even at AAU, I'm going to stay with you because I don't want you to leave. And then now you have even this dynamic to where kids are going to school everywhere now. Like, you didn't leave your area. You got kids from New York going to Finley Prep. They all over the map.
Right.
You got to physically stop and Google to see where the kid is from. Because he might be from Alaska, where he's at Mount Verde now. You're like, what is going on? They all over because the landscape has changed. And like we said, there's good things to it, but there's also elements that's going to hit hard as an adult that I don't know if everybody's going to be able to recover from, because you know now too, Mike, it's more instant. If you're not hitting right away, you trash. And this might be the first time that you've ever been called trash in your freshman year at college. How do you bounce back from that? You don't know, because you never had to do it.
It's really interesting, I think, when you talk about just the transfer portal and kids leaving and going to different schools, and that's trickling down, obviously, to the high school level as well. But you look at some of these rosters, where you talk about a high major school, a mid-major school. And it used to be, let's take it from a mid-major perspective, right? It used to be at a mid-major, maybe you get a kid who's a diamond in the rough, a kid who got overlooked for whatever reason. Now you bring that kid in at a mid-major, develops into a really good player. And by the time that kid's a senior, now maybe that's one of those teams that makes a run to the Sweet 16 in the NCAA tournament because they got that one guy who other schools miss. Well, nowadays, that kid comes in and he averaged 17 a game
at
a mid-major. He's gone. he's going to be at a high major school, because why wouldn't that high major school take him? Because they already know, look, this kid's already made the adjustment to college. We already know he can play at the college level. Why would I recruit a high school kid who I have no idea whether or not this kid's going to translate to the college game? So you have it going that way. And then
100%.
And then on the other end of it, you got a kid who maybe goes to a high major school, doesn't get the minutes that they want in their freshman or sophomore year. And now they're like, instead of developing and putting their time in, and maybe they get an opportunity then when they're later, maybe they transfer down. And so there's just, it's amazing when you look at, I think the job of a college coach to try to be able to put together a cohesive team under the system we have now, man. I don't envy any of those guys.
I don't. And I think that it's going to over time phase some of the old school guys out. It's too much work. It's too much coddling. It's too much effort to have a brand new team like that. And then it also is too much question marks. I can't really be the powerhouse like I'm used to being a powerhouse, because I don't know who's going to be here next year.
I don't even know, right? I don't even know my roster. Every year, every year my roster looks different. It's a whole new set of guys.
The guys I might count on, they might come to me and be like, yo, I'm out. You're like, wait a minute, man. I had you locked in at the power forward next year, at the wing. You know what I mean? Everything's positional now. I had you at the wing. And they're like, nah, I'm going, man. I'm going across, man. Me and my guys is going to Florida State next year.
Right.
I'm like, well, man. And then it also changes the dynamic of these high school kids. I'm trying to tell them. I said, listen, y'all pool is getting smaller, because they can go right into the portal. We're getting hundreds of kids going in the portal every year. So like you just said, I'd rather go and get him who's already been experienced and exposed to the college life, and I know he can do it, as opposed to this question mark to this young guy. I seen him on his Instagram. I don't know if he's ready for it. So you're like, man, I'm not getting the looks.
It all comes back to social media, right?
They check it. They tell me.
They tell
me. They check it. So I said, listen, use it like a resume. You promote everything positive, or your accolades as far as your academics, you know, post some of your workouts. You use that as a resume for you in high school. And nothing more, because it will come back to you if you do otherwise.
For sure. And there's definitely, as you said, there's a positive to it. And it's just a matter, it's a responsibility of us as adults, whether it's coaches, 100%. Teachers, parents, to be able to help kids to navigate it and to know what's appropriate to put on there and what's not. And then the scary part too with that, though, is that you can't be around as an adult, as a parent, as a coach. You're not around that kid. And because that phone is attached to all of us 24 hours a day.
That Snapchat is getting them, man.
Yeah, it's there all the time. And so you can provide, we know as adults, we can provide as much guidance as we want, but still sometimes kids, because they're 15, 16, 17, 18, 20, they make decisions that don't look so good in the light of day. And it could put them in a bad position. When you and I were growing up, you could make a mistake and, yeah, maybe some people around you knew about it, but the whole world certainly
didn't. That's not national news.
No, not at all.
I'm thankful for that, because I've fumbled the bag quite a few times.
For sure.
And I mean, there's just things that make national news.
Yeah, there's just things that you look back on and you're like, man, that was dumb, or man, I shouldn't have done that. But there's no, other than maybe a little oral history of your friends who were there with you when it happened,
right.
There's not really much else out there. So it's an interesting world that we grew up in, and it's an interesting world that kids today are growing up in. Let's think about your recruitment and how you ended up at St. John's. Talk a little bit about that story.
Yeah, so I was a dual sport athlete. I actually had more offers for football at a DB and wide receiver. So I got recruited pretty heavily for that. So that was kind of on the table, but I wasn't very physical. So, and being from New York, the hoop dream is strong. So I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to do the football thing. I don't like colliding into people. I like catching and doing all that.
See, but if you would have grown up in Texas, it might have been different, right?
It might have been a little different. Or even if I just had somebody else, because it was brand new for me. I was the first one to get majorly recruited. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So just even taking a look at it a bit more, football is an easier transition than basketball. Slide it to the unusually tall person. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I have a couple of different things coming at me now. So I'm getting, I was, say, junior year, mid-majors. I'm mid-major. And then, like I said earlier, we won the state title. So now I'm squarely in the midst of everything in New York. And Gary Charles from the Long Island Panthers called me. And then we had Jason Frazier, who's coming up the ranks. Jason Frazier was at 6'8 that time. End up being 6'10", top five guy in the class behind me. I'm class of 01, he's class of 02. So now we're on the Long Island Panthers. This is the first time I've ever played AAU. Prior to that, it was CYO, local stuff. So I'm traveling the country now as a junior, and I'm seeing the world. Mind you, our team was stacked. We had Sebastian Telfair, Charlie Villanueva. We had Jason Frazier, Eric Ferguson, who ended up going to Arkansas. Eric King went to St. John's with me. Kurt Sumter, who went to Villanova, a lot of big time players. So we're playing all over the country and we're traveling and doing our thing. And I'm seeing the money men by us. I'm like, yo, this is different. This is different than just playing at Boulder Met. And as I'm doing that, I'm getting better. We didn't have any resources, but I'm soaking up all of this information. You know what I mean? We're meeting some of the pro guys and stuff like that because of the network I'm around. So I'm like, I can get used to this. And I know in my I can get used to this. You know what I mean? I can get used to this. And I'm like, I know in my heart I have the ability. You know what I mean? I also have the know-how. I mean, I have the want to. I just need more of the know-how. So going into my senior year, I'm like, I'm going to dominate. I don't want to lose a game in football or basketball. And it was close. I lost my last game in football. We lost a heartbreaker. And then a couple days later, we didn't have any practices. I lost my first game to Archbishop Malloy, really good team in Queens. And then we ran the table. So we ended up going 27-1 in basketball. We went 11-1 in football. So it was like, now I'm starting to get a lot of interest. So it came down to Texas A&M, Pitt, Illinois, and St. John's. St. John's is, you know, they're in the backyard. They play in the garden. I took a visit to Texas A&M. That was probably the best fit for me. My first offer was Manhattan College with Bobby Gonzalez. They had Luis Flores who ended up getting drafted for the Nuggets. I was like, I'm trying to go Big East. So I was almost big time in them. And this is something I tell the kids, don't do that. Even in your own mind, be respectful. Manhattan was the first offer, and the guy that was the head recruiter was Mike Malone, the coach of the Denver Nuggets. I'm like, okay. You really don't know who you're dealing with.
That's so true.
Future. And you know what I mean? So I went to A&M, and they showed me so much love. They had a little group chat and everything on the baby internet, and they knew I was coming. They were showing me love, and I'm like, I could get used to this, but this is far. And it looks very country and what is this? But I didn't have the foresight, Mike, to be like, man, this is a good fit. We was going through some things at home, and I'm like, I think I need to be home. So naturally, it was like, if I can make it at St. John's, then I can make it anywhere. So that was what I went with. I went with St. John's University.
And what's that experience like when you get there as a freshman?
A whirlwind. It was a whirlwind for me because, again, no resources. And then I only had 1 year on the circuit. So when I got there, I was behind the eight ball just with information. Like you said, I'm like, what? Jarvis told me to change floors. I said, what? And he's fighting the whistle. He's fumbling the whistle, trying to blow it as loud as he can. Change. So he's like, physically, you know, cross over it because there's too many people on this side of the floor. I'm like, I've never heard that in my life.
You thought, you want me to put down some carpet or what?
Yeah, you know, change floor. I'm like, I'm looking crazy. Like, you know what I mean? And it was just, you know, everybody's good. Everybody's tall. You know what I mean? Everybody's athletic. So all the things that was just working for me in high school wasn't quite working. And my confidence was going up and down. And then he was saying different things to us, man, that probably shouldn't say to your team to keep that confidence up. Like, I mean, I was a pretty decent shooter. He like, I don't want you shooting the ball. So now you got me out there pump faking. Ain't nobody right, know exactly. Me. Yeah, yep. Like, and these are the things that I try to trade. Like, play the kid into the confidence until you're like, bro, you're shooting 12%. You ain't shooting the ball no more. Let him play his way through that. You know what I mean? Because anybody that has to look over their shoulder is not going to be a really good player.
So, that is so true, man.
Yeah, you want to instill the confidence in those guys, man. And within reason, of course. You know what I mean? Within reason. But it was a whirlwind for me. It was a whirlwind. It overwhelmed me with all of the magnitude. And then the Twin Towers got hit. That was the year when the Twin Towers fell. So I'm like, am I going to war? I'm the oldest kid.
Right.
You know what
man.
I'm saying? Like, yeah. I'm not really trying to be a soldier like that. But you know what I'm saying? Like, all this is going on. And again, my family was going through things, bouncing from house to house at the top. So I'm like, this is a pressure cooker for me. And then I think I put a lot more pressure on myself than I needed to. So it was tough on me. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, I have to make it instead of just saying, hey, listen, just get into this part, embrace it. You know what I mean? A lot of people don't even get to this part. I looked at the percentage of you getting from high school to Division I, it's like 1%.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Yeah. So I'm like, celebrate this and then just take the small bites at a time. I was trying to digest the whole cow and it was overwhelming me. And I didn't play that well. And I had my opportunities. I had my opportunities and I didn't play that well. So going into my sophomore year, I seen that they was bringing in an All-American and another JUCO All-American at my position. And then my teammate decided to go to Villanova. So I don't think he was happy about that. Like I had, like I had a choice in the matter. So I'm like, I might get boxed out here. I'm like, I'm not dumb. I might get boxed out here. You know what I mean? So I went and talked to him. I said, listen, coach, am I boxed out? Just keep it 100. Am I boxed out or will I have an opportunity to play for my position and play for my minutes? And he told me that. So I did a transfer because I was looking to go out because of that. Because I'm like, this is probably not going to be the best spot for me. But I'm like, I don't want to quit. I'm not a quitter, and I think I can play here. I know I can. I learned a lot my freshman year. And then we have a trainer now, Jerry Powell. Jerry Ice Powell is in New York now. And I went to him, and I worked out, and I got better, and I came back ready to go. But I didn't get that same opportunity like I was told. It hurt me a lot. It hurt me a lot. And fast forward to February of my sophomore year, we played Carmelo Anthony at Syracuse, Carrier Dome. Call my mom. I'm like, Mom, I'm not thinking it anymore. I'm letting the gun go. I'm shooting a lot of shots today. They play a zone. They don't play defense. I'm shooting. And she's like, go ahead, do your thing. So I get in, pump fake, one dribble. We go in. We on ESPN now because they're top five. So I'm like, okay, it's my night. Sub. Didn't see the rest of the floor. I watched my teammate shoot a then Big East record low, 2 for 24 from the field, 2 for 22 from the 3-point line. So I'm like, man, he made one more shot than I did, and he took 23 more shots. that was the worst feeling because I'm like, this seems more than basketball, and I'm like, man, I feel like I wasted a year. But it was a character builder for me. It was a character builder for me in a lot of ways, but it hurt. You know what I mean? It hurt because it's like, I'm not really in the plans. Obviously, it's just not this man's night. 2 for 24 is tough.
That's a lot of shots.
That's a lot of shots, man.
Hey, he wasn't looking over his shoulder.
That's my point. And that's really tough to go through. You know what I mean? Especially when you had a really good career in high school. And you're also a team player. You know what I'm saying?
Did you lose the fun? I mean,
it hurt the fun. Absolutely. And it really did. It really knocked the sails out of me. And I had to pick myself up for the bootstraps and it humbled me because it humbled me all those things at the same time. I'm like, man, I'm going to have to go down a level. My numbers are trash. Nobody on the high level is going to take me. You know what I mean? So I was like, I'm going to have to go down to a lower level because of my statistics and everything like that. I'm chopped liver right now. And I had to get the fun back, because it definitely did. I was jaded for the rest of the year. We ended up winning the NIT, and that was one of my regrets, is I wish that I was a bit more happy for my teammates, because I was just showing up to not fight the coach.
That's hard, man. That's a hard position to be in.
I'm Marshawn Lynch from there. I'm here so I do not get fined. This is why I'm here right now. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to fully quit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I got to be professional there. But it was tough. You're 19 years old. You're 19 years old going through this with no real blueprint. With no real blueprint. You got your people that are like, yeah, man, you're not getting done right. And everything like that. So it was tough, because you don't want to put it on a coach, but they hold a lot of power, especially in our time. The college coach has a lot of weight. They hold a lot of weight in those things. And if you don't get the right fit, man, it could change the course of everything.
It certainly can. There's no doubt that to go through what it takes to be a Division I college basketball player and then to not have playing time at the end of the day is really, really tough. My freshman year, I played like 4 minutes a game, and that was by far the longest year of my career. It was every day practice would come and you'd be like, oh man, like you talk about, that's why I asked you about, did it take the fun away?
It really did.
Because there was a lot of times for me where that year, I mean, there were still practices when I was playing and starting games where it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
But when there's no game at the end of it where you're playing and you know that unless something totally outrageous happens, I may not even get in the game.
Yeah.
Like that is tough, especially when you go, again, from being a high school player where you're probably the best player on your team, you're probably the best player in your area, you just have had a tremendous amount of success, and then boom, now you're in a situation where it feels like, hey, man, I could do it if I had these same opportunities, but for whatever reason, it doesn't click right away. And man, that was by far the longest year of my basketball playing career when I'm playing like 4 minutes a game. It's tough.
It's a character builder, but it has equipped me for keeping it real with the kids. I said, yep. At each level, you have to look at yourself like a walk-on. You know what I mean? Like, you have to look at yourself like a walk-on, because you have to reestablish at each level. You know what I mean? You have to reestablish it. And that's why I tell these kids, even too, when they take the court, we're talking basketball, but I tell them whatever they sport, you have to learn how to be efficient. And they're like, what you mean? I'm like, you may score 25, but you also may have took 25 shots. You might have took 30 shots. So when people look, they're going to see the points, but I'm looking at the field goal percentage. I'm looking at the flow of the game. I'm looking at those type of things. Cause when you get to the next level, it's probably a low percentage that you're going to be one of the guys able or allowed to take that many shots. And then if you have enough skill set and are blessed to go to the next level, there's only a handful of guys that are allowed to take that many shots. So you have to learn how to be efficient in taking 8. I got to learn how to be more efficient at taking 10 shots.
That's awesome. That is so, so true. We had Mike Procopio on probably, I don't know, it was probably a year ago, and he worked with Kobe back when he was kind of, him and Kobe got connected, and then Kobe would send him videotape and Mike would break that videotape down. And he kind of became his guy. And then Mike worked for the Mavericks, and basically his whole mantra is like, you got to dominate simple. And he's like, there's only 15 or 20 guys in the whole league that matter, and everybody else is a role player. And you got to figure out what it is that you do that you can contribute to the team. And I think so many times at the high school level, at the college level, everybody kind of has this vision of
score.
I'm going to get to be the guy like I'm going to be Carmelo.
You are not going to be James Harden out there that could go out there and take 30 dribbles in a possession.
It's just not going to happen. And so, you know, part of it is, yeah, you want to work and you want to get better at your game, but then there's a party that says, look, if I could just be a great post defender and learn how to screen and catch the ball on the roll and score or make the next simple pass, if I just learned how to do those things, I could be so valuable to my team. But instead, a lot of times you'll see that kid working out on 14 dribble between the legs moves.
and you're like,
you're never going to get to do that in a game. And so, but that's something that's hard to get across to a 15-year-old kid and even to a 21-year-old junior in college.
It's a highlight-driven world.
So, it is.
But at the same time, are you trying to make money at doing this? So start with the simple, and then if you are allowed to do that, then you can add that to it. Somebody like Jimmy Butler, he started out, I'm getting in.
Right.
And then he started to expand his role with his minutes. So they're like, man, wow, he could do that. And he started gradually doing that to where he's an all-star, and now he could do what he wants out there.
It doesn't happen that way very often, though, that's
it
for
doesn't.
Sure.
No, so you got to assume your role. So you have to learn how to be efficient. And that's also life. You know what I mean? That's
so
life.
True.
You have to learn how to be efficient. That's something I try to tell all of them. Learn how to be efficient. One of the main things is your communication and effort. If you can consistently do that, you're already ahead of the curve, because not a lot of people can do that. Not a lot of people can bring that consistent, you know, positive attitude and communication and effort. Not
Isn't that so true? Like, as a business owner, mm-hmm. my wife and I have this conversation with our kids all the time. It's like, look, if you just call people back and are polite, you're ahead of like 95% of the population just if you do those two things. Forget about being a superstar. Like, we're talking about just be polite and call people back. Man, you're
you're ahead of them again.
Yeah,
that's a fact.
You are. And it's kind of amazing. It all right, St. Francis, talk about St. Francis.
So St. Francis was interesting. It was the bizarro world of St. John's. St. John's got all the money and all the stuff. And we got Jordan stuff, and we got all of these boxes coming in and everything. St. Francis, man, you might as well just, we was pretty much getting stuff from the Goodwill. It was like the budget, like what budget? You know what I'm saying? We pulling our own money together, man. Let's go ahead and just walk over to Fulton Street and grab a couple things. Like, we're looking like, we can't wear this. But it was the opposite. Zero history. They never made the tournament. Losing seasons. Like, all of these type of things. And I'm like, man, how the mighty have fallen. But at the same time, what a golden opportunity this is for me. Because then I humbled myself. I said, I'm thankful that somebody took me. You know what I mean? And it was still, I was still in the area. So people are still going to see, you know, you're still in Brooklyn. You know what I'm saying? So I'm like, all right, why not be the centerpiece of something special here? And of course, you sit out the first year, and the first year was tough because you're sitting out and you're just practicing the practice. And all the while, I'm getting yelled at and screamed at. And I'm like, bro, I'm not even balls thrown at me because, you know, I'm joking around. I ain't playing. You know, people sit. And, you know what I mean? But he was trying to set the tempo. You're coming from a high major. And if I can get you in alignment with being able to take criticism and everything like that, then it's going to trickle down to all of the other players who were never recruited like that. And I get that now, but why he disrespecting? You know what I'm saying? I'm ready to square up with Coach. Right? I'm not even playing.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? But that's the maturation of a young kid going into a man. So I'm practicing with them. They didn't have that great season. Junior year goes in, and I'm excited. Struggling with money, you know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have the same resources. Like, I had to get a summer job. I'm working in the Brooklyn Terminal Market in the nighttime in the seedy part of town. It's tough out here right now. I'm a college athlete. Well, I shouldn't be doing this.
Right.
And, you know what I mean? So going into my junior year, me and my friend were selling back books. You know what I'm saying? Used books so we can get some extra money. And so it got pinned back to the guy, and they pressed this dude that we was breaking off. And they ended up suspending us, like kicking us out of school. So we had to get reinstated, me and my teammate. So I'm like, I'm going through it already. I had to get reinstated. So they end up suspending us for the first three games. So then I come back, my first game against Army. And they wasn't very good. So I'm like, all right, I'm about to smoke these dudes. So I end up scoring like 26 on them. Everybody's excited. And I'm like, okay, here we go. So that year kind of goes up and down. I think I averaged like 14 points, but wasn't anywhere near what I was hoping for. And then we had a coaching change. And my senior year, we're going through a lot of stuff at home. Money's low. There's a lot of stuff, going stuff with my girlfriend. It was just like compiling on me, this stuff off the court. But a lot of people didn't know. I was one that didn't show my hand. A lot of people didn't know that I was going through those things, more so than what most people thought. So my senior year was even worse. It was terrible. I had a terrible senior year. So I'm like, bro, my career is pretty much done. Pretty much done. So we didn't make the tournament. We got ousted by LIU. We stunk. I stunk. I was just like, it felt like it was just a complete shackle around me that you can't even explain. And it was like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? So I'm dejected. I'm like, man. But I remember the year before, my teammate played in the USBL with the Brooklyn Kings. So I'm like, I remember seeing him do good. I think I could give that a try. So they had a Long Island team. And guess who's the assistant coach? Jack Agostino.
There you go. Nice. That's a good connection.
I had a plug. I know that guy. I know him. So he said, come on down. So I go down there. Now we're playing NBA rules. You know what I mean? So we're playing NBA rules. And I'm like, that's more fitted to me. This college boxing one and all this, these guys diving at me. I'm get out of here with that. I'm more of the free flowing style. This is better for me. So he gets me into that. And they didn't know who I was. They was playing with a lot of guys that was coming back from overseas that was trying to get summer league jobs, you know, jobs with the NBA summer league and everything like that. So I was buried on the bench. One time the head coach couldn't make the game. So Jack Agostino's the head coach. So I moved to the sixth man.
Nice.
So I moved to the sixth man, man. I took off, man. I think that game I had like 20 coming off the bench. I'm dunking. They're like, who is this dude? And I'm like, this is my opportunity. This is my opportunity. So I end up winning Rookie of the Year for that. So I seen there was a guy like Brian Chase that went to Virginia Tech that ended up playing in the Summer League. So I'm seeing these guys that I'm playing against that are going to the Summer League and the G League, which was the D League at the time. I'm like, I got a chance. I'm going to be able to go through the back door. I'm going to get an opportunity. I know I got the drive, and now I figure I got all this ebbs and flows in my career. I'm developed now. I can do it. So the one thing now that I'm learning, Mike, is you need to have somebody that's connected. You need to have a good agent.
That's for sure.
Man, my agent might as well have been my dad. It could have been my uncle.
How'd you get connected with the guy?
He was hanging around the gym at the USBL.
There you go.
He was one of the guys hanging around these guys. So they was like, he's my agent. So I'm like, all right. Man, he couldn't get me no deals, man. No deals after I did that. Couldn't really parlay me into anything. So I was just kind of sitting there, and I bounced from that to the ABA. I ended up going and playing in South America for a little bit. I was cooking out there, and it was going to transfer into the first league. And then I had some opportunities to play in Poland and Finland. But I was like, you know what, man? I think I'm just going to just tuck in here in America. I tried out a couple of times for the D League. Went to a big showcase in Atlanta. I was cooking crazy out there, but I was still under this guy. So I'm not going to say his name because I'm going to be respectful. He was a nice guy, but I mean, shoot, man. It probably was a Cracker Jack box. He got the certification in the cereal box. Dig his hand in there, pull that joint out. Like, yeah, the Captain Crunch joint.
Nice.
So I'm like, I think my career is over. And it was a hard pill to swallow. It was a hard pill to swallow because I feel like I left a lot on the table. But as an adult, man, I feel like it allowed me to be better at what I'm doing right now. Because I think if I had more success, I would have had more empathy, and I would be a lot more self-absorbed than I am now. A lot more selfless. So I think it worked out in the grand scheme of things. But it was tough because I feel like I left a lot on the table with my actual ability.
Yeah, that's the thing where so much of it is context, right? And where you end up and fit. And we have a lot of the college coaches that we have that come on, and that's one of the biggest things that they talk about, especially guys that coach at the Division III level, really talk about that a lot. That, like, look, you got to find the right fit between you and the basketball program, you and the coaching staff, you and the school, you and the environment on the campus. And if you do that, then you can end up with a really good experience. And sometimes kids do that and they get lucky and they get in the right spot. Sometimes you end up in a place that, for whatever reason, it just doesn't work. And you see somebody that, like yourself, you feel like, man, if I just would have made decision X, or man, you wish you could replay it. It's kind of like that old theory of like, look, if I could replay my career 10 times, what does it look like? Or I replay that college decision, what does it look like if I get to a better environment right from the get-go? And, you know, it's obviously the life lesson there is you only get one chance to do it and try to figure it out. And to your point, I think that just hearing you talk, the way that you've been able to take what you've learned and parlay it into not somebody who's sitting there and is bitter about what happened to them, but instead has looked at it as, hey, it could have worked out differently. I wish it would have worked out differently, but what can I learn from my experiences? And then how can I take that learning and apply it to what I'm about to do now? And it seems like that's what you've been able to do. Now, I can't let you get away without asking about your favorite Uruguay basketball story. What's the craziest South American basketball story that you can share? We can go up to PG-13.
I think one of the craziest things is when they lit stuff on fire. I didn't know that was a lab. So we're playing on the road, and then this place is so when I went there, this I didn't even know this too. I'm just happy that I packed most of my stuff. You know what I mean? I was in between, so I just packed. It was wintertime down there. I said, it get winter down
here. You're like, what? It's, man, July? It's July?
Yeah, so it's south of the equator, Mike. So it was summer for us, but it was winter for them. So I went out there like to stair step, go out there and cook, and then you're going to play in the first division, you know, saying next go round. That was going to be the deal. And I did my thing. I was thrashing these dudes. But it was cold in some of the arenas. So these dudes lit a trash can on the top of the zone on fire. And then they lit, you know, sometimes they'd be throwing the flag and they saying stuff in Spanish. And
right.
They lit the thing on fire. And nobody was tripping. The game was being played. Confetti's on the court. And I'm like, I'm concerned. You know what I'm saying? I'm a bit concerned because I'm like, first of all, it's a fire hazard. I don't want to lose my life like that. And then also, how am I supposed to get right where all the smoke? and nobody did anything about it. You just had to learn how to deal with this smoke and play. The craziest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's crazy.
Nobody swept the confetti, really. He's kicking it. With, players are kicking it in between whistles. With
you just
feet.
Slide.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm okay with this, that part of it. Because, you know, I played in the rain and stuff like that. It's just fire out there. And they're out there drinking their little mati teas. I'm like, this is crazy. This is like, and it's almost third world. Like,
I believe it. I mean,
nuts.
I'm sure you know that, and I'm sure you've heard the stories of people that played and just the different things that have gone on in these countries and the way fans behave and stuff they're throwing and lighting on fire and flares and all this other kind
flares
of crazy stuff.
It's like, yeah. Yo.
It is a whole nother world. Like, people sometimes, I think, romanticize what that looks like. And maybe if you get to some of the top leagues, you end up having, yeah, then maybe you have a pretty good experience. But I've talked to so many guys that, and I never had the opportunity to go and play. And just like, you know, you having regrets, I kind of wish that I had gotten an opportunity just for a year, just to experience it and gone and live somewhere else. But I've talked to so many guys that have just so many crazy stories about fan behavior and bus trips and trying to get their check from this guy and nobody speaks English and just the whole thing, man. Is just, it's crazy.
I got a crazier story for you in Brooklyn.
All right. I'm ready.
So we're playing in the ABA now. This is the Brooklyn Wonder. They end up changing management, became the Brooklyn Comets or something like that. So we're supposed to get paid, right? Nope. All right, the check will be here, you know, later this week. Check the income. So we play the game, right? Check will be here next week. So we 2 weeks in, and it's getting close to, you know, like the holiday season. I need my check. We got a bunch of grimy dudes. We got dudes from New Jersey. We got, like, these dudes is hood. You know, we got a couple kids, and you know what I'm saying? A couple records. And it's like, you know what, bro? Like, we all going to go up to the office. And we're going to wait for him. And we're going to talk to him. And Cool. So we'll hop on the train and we meet up in there, and it's like six of us. Tim's on and it's rugged. Dudes don't have no shape ups. Like, I need all of that. So we sitting in there, and then the receptionist was like, oh no, he's left and he'll be back. So we said, he said he won't be back till later today. And we like, all right, we're going to wait for him. We waiting for him. So we laughing and joking, but some dudes are serious. You know, they pacing around looking, and we walk, one of the dudes walked by his office and they said, hold on. Like, stop. Like, hold on. And everybody's froze. They said, yo, I hear something in there. So, Mike, they bust the door open.
Oh, my God.
And this dude is under the desk. So, what I mean, the two biggest dudes, we had some goons. It's about 6'8", and they picked him up by his collar. And they said, yo, you cutting the checks right now. So, he pulled out, and he cut the checks. And we ran to the thing, because we love... I'm like, I know that all these checks ain't going to hit.
Right. Yeah, right. I got to get mine in first before the last one's bounced, right?
The first four hit, and I was one of the first four to get it. But they picked this dude up, and we was in there for about 2.5 hours. So this dude was sitting under the desk for 2.5 hours. Wow,
that is crazy. That's hilarious.
That's minor league basketball.
That is nice. That is minor league basketball. That encapsulates it perfectly.
Without a doubt.
All right. Last part of the story. So we kind of went in reverse order because we went with what you're doing now first, and then we kind of did the build up. So what's the transition? What did you think you wanted to do when you got out of college, when you were done playing? What did you kind of envision, or did you just kind of always envision, hey, I'm going to figure out a way to play and make it work? And then once you were done, you looked around and be like, hey, I got to do something. How did you get to what you're doing now? What was the transition like? And did you always kind of know that that was where you're going to end up?
The answer is no. So young, I told my mom, I'm a professional athlete. You know, I recognized at an early age I had the ability, whether it be baseball, football, basketball. It gravitated towards basketball for the reasons we spoke about.
Right.
I'm going to be a professional athlete, and then I will branch off of that. And when that didn't happen, it crushed me. I felt like I let everybody down. Because, you know, I'm one of the most likely to succeed. I was voted for that. You know, he's going to be one of the guys. You know what I mean? So I feel like I let not just my family down, my neighborhood down. Like, it hit me. So it took me a long time to get over that. But I'm thankful that the Lord has helped me to get over that in order for it not to, you know what I mean, hurt me now and hurt my family. Because there's a lot of guys who have it.
Yeah.
So I went to school for communications, film, and broadcast. So I actually had a couple of internships lined up with Fox and ABC and a couple of things like that, but I passed them up for the hoop dream. So as I'm sitting there, like, my career is over. Like, I'm a recreational guy right now. It's that way. Like, I don't have any connections. What's going to be my lane? So I'm flipping through the channels and I see an exercise video. I'm seeing this guy, Sean T, jumping around and doing that. I'm like, wait, he's not even doing nothing. But it sparked something in me. Like, hold on, man. I was always the guy creating drills. Like, I was him. I was the guy creating the drills and doing these types of things. And I'm like, how'd you feel when you came off that? And I was the guy that they was giving feedback to. So I'm like, yo, that's naturally me. I think the fitness industry might be my lane. I don't know exactly how, so I started doing research. Started prayerfully doing research, like, Lord, help me to do this. But I knew that there was many branches that you could go. You could train, you know, overweight people. You could train elderly. Like, everybody needs fitness of some sort in their life. And then I was like, athletes, I am one, and then I can learn how to train one. That's where a lot of people don't. You have people that go and get a kinesiology degree, but they ain't ever hoop. They never kicked a soccer ball. They never played. They never played anything at a high level. So they don't have that connection with them. So they give them information, but they don't build a relationship. So I'm like, I'm that. I just need to learn more of the exercises. And I'm more than capable of doing that. And I'm more than willing to learn that part. So it was a natural transition into that. And then from there, it felt like more of an assignment. And then also more of what I'm supposed to be doing at this time, if that makes sense.
makes total sense. And I think from the beginning of our conversation, you could see the passion that you have for what you're doing now and for trying to help your athletes improve. Again, no matter what age they are, no matter what sport they play, the passion that you have for that certainly came through loud and clear. Before we get out, Tristan, I want to give you a chance to share how people can connect with you, social media, website, just let people know how they can reach out, find out more about what you're doing. And then after we do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Perfect. Perfect. So yeah, I've worked with every demographic. You know, I have a circuit training class there's a lot of middle-aged women. I work with everybody. So I'm on pretty much all the social media platforms. So first, my website is thefitlabusa.com, thefitlabusa.com. And you can find me on Instagram at thefitlabusa. You also can find me on Facebook, thefitlabusa, and Twitter is fitlabusa. So I'm on all of them. I think I'm even on Snapchat, the FitLab USA. As well.
Nice.
I got Snapchat.
If you're training high school kids, you better have Snapchat.
I got Snapchat.
You gotta get TikTok too, man. You gotta get TikTok too.
Man, that TikTok almost blew my brains out trying to figure that out. I got on there for 7 minutes and I seen the world in 7 minutes. So I do actually have a TikTok, but I don't know what I'm doing. I got to delegate that to the.
Jason and I haven't gone that far. We haven't gotten to TikTok yet. We probably should, but we haven't.
TikTok is wild. Everything is little bites, and it's like I don't know what's going on here. But we do have that, so you can find me on that. And then as far as reaching out to me, my email is info@thefitlabusa. Or you can put Tristan@thefitlabusa.com. And I'm very accessible. I'm really just here to help as many people as I can. And just really just enjoy my part. Enjoy playing my part.
Tristan, we can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your schedule. And I'm so thankful to Coach Agostino for relaying your information to us so we can get an opportunity to have this conversation with you. It's been a lot of fun. We went through a lot of different aspects of what it means to be an athlete growing up and then what it means to transition into a business owner and a trainer and the way that the world is today in terms of trying to help young athletes to maximize what they can be. So thank you. Truly appreciative. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.